A Night In is brought to you by Ashwood Music.
I'm Nick Elliott, rock art photographer, and we are having a night in.
Good evening, and welcome back.
How you doing?
To Sandy Newman for another night in. You're back round my place,
I'm
son.
I'm back again.
Saturday night.
Braving the cold, yes again.
Oh dear, it's got worse, man. It's got worse than the last time you were around.
I know. I thought we were going to get venturing towards summer, but not yet.
Oh, goodness me. No, roll on the spring, that's what I say. Get a bit of heat going on.
Roll on the spring.
Indeed.
Keep it clean, darling.
Eyes down, new game. Two fat ladies, number 11.
Oh, don't. No, last time I did that was in South Africa.
Really?
Yeah.
Did they play bingo in South Africa?
Well, I was in South Africa and we were doing a show with the Trogs and the Swinging Blue Jeans. And I was asked... I was asked, along with Ronnie Bond, the original drummer of the Trogs, if we would go and read the bingo numbers at the lunchtime session in Sun City.
I was like bingo. I did.
That was funny. It was really funny.
Bingo was good.
Yeah.
Do they still play bingo like they used to?
I really don't know.
No, that was
an occasion that couldn't be turned down. So we it was a spoof. It was a spoof, but it wasn't a spoof. It was a crack.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
The staff.
But no, wonderful to see you again.
You too.
And fantastic. So pleased you could come round and spend a bit of time. We'll play a few tunes. And we're going to eat some Jaffa Cakes, because that's what we've got this week.
Jaffa
Cakes. No cake. Well, only in
There's
the
no
actual...
There's no cake without Jaffa.
In the title of Jaffa Cake. That's the only appearance that cake will make.
It's sponge, actually.
In tonight's show.
Jaffa sponge.
But you can't whack a Jaffa cake, actually.
Oh, no. It's that.
And they're Moorish. You can nog a box of them bastards.
I've got to keep them away from my grandchildren.
No two ways.
Absolutely, yeah.
I don't mind a bit of that.
No.
Not at all. Anyway, we're going to start the show with a bit of this.
It has.
Hard day's night.
Not off. All right, pop pickers.
Absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Lennon.
Why this track, Sand? I mean, this comes from your playlist.
Where do you start? If you like the Beatles, which I do and did, and it was very formative in my life. And I mean, it opened up. It didn't just open up to them. It opened up to things they liked. They took over the media unprovoked. It just changed a lot of society.
Yeah.
And certainly the vision of up and coming. You know, Bee Gees measured. Everybody measured to the Beatles. Rolling Stones measured to the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know,
they were the yardstick, weren't they?
Absolutely. I'm absolutely sure it never, ever in a million years set out to be. It was fate. It was stuff happened.
Yeah.
The chemistry. The George Martin putting the shine on stuff that could maybe have been... They could maybe have been just another Swinging Blue Jeans. Or just another whatever. As a lot of these Liverpool acts could have been.
I was never a big fan myself.
No, okay.
I wasn't. In my time, there was... couple of three decisions to make. You went one of three ways, which is Beatles, Rolling Stones, or The Who.
Oh,
so,
unquestionably.
You know, it was Stones and Who for me by a long way. Although I owned a couple of their albums on vinyl, I now probably own more Beatles material than I've ever done.
Right.
Probably about six albums I've got now. Abbey Road, Pepper, you know, Revolver.
Our Let It Be,
etc., etc. But I was never... I mean, their pop songs just really grinded on me.
At the time?
Yeah, at the time. And still do, really.
Right, yeah.
You know, I sat watching... was it Help the other week? Or it might have been this film. It might have been this one.
Well, this was Black and White.
And it was... It was testing. I found it testing. You know, it's a little bit too nonsense for me.
Yeah.
At the film was. Not so much the track.
But any of these films or any bands were always nonsense.
Theirs were, I think, brought to
a slightly higher level. You know?
Well, I'd never watched this all the way through, which was Mystery Tour, Magical Mystery Tour, which I watched over the Christmas period.
Right.
And do you know, I loved it.
Yeah?
I absolutely loved it. And the whole concept of it, I think it was because essentially it was a concept film.
It was further down the line. It was Après Drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
It was Après Drugs. Yeah. I mean, the early stuff, like the things that maybe grated on you, I liked them. I almost have this great memory of walking to the showgrounds at school with a friend of mine. Because we had to walk from the school to the showgrounds to do anything to do with sport.
Yep.
And I said, I heard that new Beatles record, I want to hold your hand. He says, nah, they've got no future whatsoever. Always stuck in my mind.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, people who...
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Not that I knew any different at the time, but I didn't have that same opinion. But so maybe things like that, I can't agree with you because I did like them. You know, the She Loves Yous and stuff like that. I Want to Hold Your Hand, Day Tripper. Yeah, I mean, they were part of things that I played and learned from.
Yeah, it was a period, wouldn't it?
It was a period for me as a learning guitar player.
I can relate to that.
It was moving from the shadows. And there was the Rolling Stones. I mean, I was thinking of I think I maybe mentioned the last time I was here, the very, very early stuff for me playing in a pub with the gentleman who was the drummer who took me to see the Searchers as a wee boy. He was a great sort of Beatles Searchers fan, and you know, you learn that stuff. I loved the Beatles. I loved the Rolling Stones.
Yeah,
and I can remember doing things like Nervous Breakdown and trying to get the lyrics and things like that. When you used to have to get the record and you had to get the lyrics from the record.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
or else you had
listen
to buy.
And learn.
There was a magazine that you used to buy with words in it, but they were never always right.
Right.
It was actually just a magazine. That's all it was. It was lyrics of current songs.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah,
it was a small sort of sheet.
Talking about the Rolling Stones.
early. This
absolutely
is
absolutely brilliant. Now, I really loved.
I used to sing this.
There, did you really?
With that first wee band that played in the pub.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, so it was everything. But in terms of creativity at the time, I mean, they had the blues, mass blues influence.
Yeah, yeah.
I can remember being in the community centre rehearsal hall, which I tried to go back and film in there. I was doing it sounds a bit grandiose, but I was doing a kind of documentary of my life that led to where I'm at.
I remember.
And I was in Scotland with a proper videographer. And we went back to this community centre that I'd started rehearsing in with things like this. And the first Decca Rolling Stones album.
Yeah.
And you're learning songs that you then learned were not their songs. They were songs from the Chuck Berrys
and
all the proper blues. That took me on a journey too. So I didn't not like the Rolling Stones. But I loved the Beatles' freshness. And for me, all these early records still sound... doesn't matter where and when you hear them, they still sound as fresh as they
did. I love the early Stones, the early Stones singles.
Yeah, with Brian. Oh. With Brian. There's a different thing. But then, again, the later stuff was just still going on. went on forever.
Yeah.
And some of it is just, like, unreal. It's just brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, an awful lot of that. I don't know if you've read the Keith Richards book, have you?
No, I haven't, actually.
Oh, you must.
That's on audiobook book, isn't it?
Oh, it must be.
Yeah, it is. His biography.
But it's fabulous because it puts you... This might sound like a seriously stupid measure because I don't measure myself to any of these huge talents worldwide. But when you read the early... it's absolutely no different from what I went through or any musicians went through. The early vibe of how it felt, the rehearsals and what you were trying to achieve or thinking you were trying to achieve.
What of that period are you talking about?
That whole period of naivety, you know, being a fan of this and learning it and wanting to go on stage. I mean, I went 14, 15 years old, I don't know. I thought I was Stevie Marriott for six months, you know. and fucking worshipped everything that he did.
Yeah.
And Stevie Winwood. That was. And I loved Paul McCartney, but I also liked John Lennon, and I loved the writing, and I didn't know why, but I just did. And then when it got to the Rubber Soul, Revolver, Beatles-wise,
yeah,
I was like, fucking hell, this is a whole new world here. Because then that had kicked in
yeah.
with their creativity. And likewise with the Stones as well, but all in a different way, but still the same. It also went wider in many, many ways. So, and I'm that's just really narrowing it down to that measure, but all the periphery. And then being exposed to the Bob Dylan, I was a mass Bob Dylan fan. I was at the 1966 Odeon in Glasgow show of when he went from...
Acoustic.
First half was acoustic, second half was of the
electric,
band.
Electric, yeah.
With all this black boxes at the side of the stage.
Outrage.
Nobody knew what they were. The new PA system thing with bass bins and mid-range horn. You didn't know what it was. Just, you know, you're looking for... Where's the Marshall Columns? It was all a bit strange, Nick.
Good times.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah.
Well, I think forming times as well, wouldn't it? I mean, certainly from what I do. You know, it was, I mean, one of my biggest influences, why I even got started as a photographer, was David Bailey.
Oh.
You know, that guy, he just changed things. He moved the line. He said, you know, he said, fuck you. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I want to do.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, you know, I'm out of here. I'm gone.
I actually bought one of his books many, many, many years ago, and it wasn't because of what he was photographing. I was photographing what became his wife.
Yeah.
His name escapes me, from Hawaii.
Veneur.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I do. He shot all his wives, didn't he?
The one who's, she looks Hawaiian.
Catherine Deneuve.
She looks great. No, not Catherine Deneuve.
That was he kind of cites her as being, you know, his greatest ever model.
I see. Right. No, this was,
I'm trying to remember.
No matter. Whatever.
No, I can't remember. We'll play this and see if it helps me remember.
Oh. Oh.
Marie Elbin. That was his wife.
Jimmy.
I shot this guy probably about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, the Cambridge Folk?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I know.
Walked by him backstage, and forgive me, I didn't even know who he was.
No. Why would you? It's a geezer bloke. It's just...
Didn't even know who he was till somebody pointed it out.
Doesn't mean... Sorry. Always.
Lovely track. Lovely, lovely track.
He picked a reasonable version. There's so many versions of his songs that he's done as well.
Why this track, Sand?
It's a bit like saying, why Hard Day's Night?
Does it say anything to you, or is it just because, you know, you wanted to put it in your tent?
No, the lyric says an awful lot to me. Just life. But this particular version is... it's just... The way the writer does his own tunes as well, you know.
This guy's catalogue is massive, isn't it?
Massive,
in a writing capacity, it's
and
massive.
And it's not just a catalogue. It's a catalogue of complete quality.
Yeah.
In my book.
Yeah, yeah, I'd agree.
In other people's book goes, oh, that's a boring load of shit. But the nonce of how he presents what he does, it's not even... And I don't even think he thinks it that way. It's just... It's kind of... Well, this is just what I do.
Yeah.
This is what I wrote. But it doesn't just come from nowhere. It comes from life experience, disappointment, achievement, failed relationships, successful. I suppose if there may be other songs, but this one kind of captures a lot of the tonality of all these things for me.
Yeah, no, I know exactly where you're coming from.
There's a lot of walls that should stay silent.
Well, I mean, it's that's what makes these greats great, isn't it, really? It has to come from somewhere.
For me.
And it needs to come from inside.
He's one of the greatest.
Yeah, I'd agree.
As a writer.
Yeah.
So we get that. It's a fabulous version. He did a Nashville album not too long ago.
Right, okay, I think I remember.
There's a version of this on it. And it says Dave Crosby and Graham Nash.
Yep.
Singing with him. That's great as well. But there's also another thing, I don't know if it's the last thing he did. There's a song with Joe Cocker singing.
Yeah.
It's like Jim sings, it's the typical Nashvilleing up Jim's catalogue, with his full will and power on it. And he asked Joe Cocker if he would sing The Moon's a Harsh Mistress, which is another one of his songs, which Joe had done years ago, a version of.
Wonderful singer, Joe Cocker.
And this one is the two of them, but it's Joe. And you're listening and you go,
yeah, yeah. I know what you mean.
And it's a few croaking lines and you go, wow.
Wonderful track.
Jimmy Webb does me up every time. Wonderful. And obviously he's early. The Glen Campbell would never have been Glen Campbell without the Jimmy Webb. You know, the songs of Wichita.
Well, I think...
All his early catalogue, Galveston, they're all Jimmy's.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, he was one of these writers that, as I said earlier, I don't know, probably people like somebody like Leo Sayer that has written so many great tracks.
Yes, he has, actually.
For great artists.
Yeah.
But he's only ever really known for The Show Must Go On and that kind of stuff. You know, he's kind of Top of the Pop appearances and his singles.
Well, the public got turned off him a slight bit, or certainly music-y people got turned off him when we started doing the American singles, and then it just became the ballads,
yeah.
Richard Perry producing, yeah. And it all became, which I don't think he liked it, but that was, you know, I remember seeing a documentary about that, actually.
Now, I'm going to touch on something, now. I'm not too sure about this, but I was introduced to this band by your son, John.
Mm-hmm.
Me and John spent quite a bit of time talking about these. So I think John worked with these for a while. I don't know whether he features on this. After speaking to John, I bought this album and pretty much everything they did. And it is a band called The Velvet Hearts.
Oh, that was John.
This is a fantastic track.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
Is this good?
I've had to play bass on it several times.
Really?
Yeah, versions of it, yeah. I'd get drafted in for the gigs that some of them couldn't come to. And it's quite... Because it's a serious pace.
Yeah.
Which is totally... There's no click tracks or bugger all in this stuff. It's totally dictated by John.
Yeah.
This was the proper Hearts. Detroit. They recorded this in Detroit.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful band.
Ollie! Come on, yeah. I get to play with them sometimes. It's unbelievable.
Just
fantastic. Of course, keyboard players, I don't know if you're aware of Brother Strutt.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually...
Well, that's Stephen Jones, that's his thing. 100%. Everything about it.
It's a shame it's not TV because I've just watched it. You play on the bass line. It's absolutely marvellous. It really is. Absolutely marvellous. Somebody call him.
Yeah, it's a cool one.
Ignore him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Saturday night, people ringing you up. No, what's that?
So close, I know. Saturday.
Well, you got your friends round, you're having a few tunes, a couple of ciders.
I should be watching some banal television.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Jesus, God, yeah.
How?
Oh,
It was quite an experience. It was close, but no cigar, because it didn't look right. No. I was in several audiences of, you know, the Cobden clubs and all the upmarket London gigs.
Yeah.
All the right people were. And I actually, physically, would be in the earshot of people and hear them say things like, "This is great, but what is it?" Because it looked odd.
Really?
What, fuck yeah.
What, why?
Yeah, what it should have, see if it had been a John James Newman, but I always said this, not because he's my, if it had been a focus of what you saw when you saw the gig, yeah, which was a singer and an odd looking fucking band, because he'd, the female bass player,
okay,
Lydia, fucking
right,
great, a fucking great bass player, right, bit older,
yeah,
but with, troll, she looked like a fucking, she looked as if she walked out of a cave. That's
right, okay, yeah.
You had Stephen Jones with a mod suit on playing the keyboards and sax. You had this giant of a fucker doing backing vocals, fucking about with tambourines and all, oh, great.
Yeah.
And you had a hippie guitarist, great. A serious fucking heavyweight drummer. So it just looked all funny. Especially the tall. Because it was 6'7".
Jesus.
And built a fucking brick shit in us.
Really?
He'd done, he'd since done The Voice, the fucking, this thing, and this. Great singer, but not a great singer, because no identity. But he was just backing vocals. He was just mirroring everyone joined it. Because the creative force was John and Stephen.
Yeah.
But the front of it was John. Full stop. So it had been called the John James Newman band, having a different ballgame.
Yeah, yeah.
Which it started as.
Did it?
They all came to...
What, and then went to the
They
heart?
All came, having seen them, to be in, oh yeah, we'll do that. Yeah. All of them. Apart from Stephen, because him and Stephen were always an item. You know? And Stephen was always... I mean, Stephen was at school with them, man.
Utter brilliant.
Stephen was at school with John, so I mean, I've watched it. I recorded all the fucking early stuff in my bedroom in the gross room.
Really?
Of course I did.
Bugger.
Yeah, even Stephen's first, what was it called? Stephen's a talent. He's a real talent.
Don't know anything about that guy.
Stephen Jones. No, he's a great sax player. He's a good, great kid. He's a very, very smart, a great kid. I'm talking about people that are coming up 40 years old. You know? No. I remember the first time I heard my own son's voice on tape. And I remember saying, I've never heard a voice like this for years. It's got so much coverage.
Right.
Just that to that microphone in front of him, and you get this whole thing going on.
Were you aware when you heard it the first time?
Oh, fucking right away. Possibly too aware. Because I don't think I did put extra efforts into it because it was my son, but I suppose I did, because you do. But you kind of take away the fact that the talent was always, it was, you know, something I could recognise so early. And I'd love to be able to pull that stuff up again. The early naive things, you know, real naive stuff.
Yeah.
Even before he went to America and... You know, I mean, his eldest daughter's 17.
Yeah.
In February. Yeah. No, well, we're nearly there, so.
Because she...
exactly.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Was it his first album that you put together some serious musicians?
Was this the one that you recorded in
France?
Well, it was all over the place. It started off in Wokingham.
Yep.
When John came back from America, it became obvious to me that I'd heard the demos that he'd done, and they weren't even demos; they were just things on a fucking micro cassette, or things on what do you call these things before DAT tapes, and then you had the little mini disc.
Yeah.
And my wife had been in Alaska when he was living in Alaska. I didn't, because I was working, and my wife went to see, because when his daughter was born. I'd seen them in Boston when the daughter was born, and then they moved to Alaska from Boston. They drove across to Alaska from Boston. Man.
That was heavy duty, I bet.
Stop doing this to me. They're doing me up. I'm now on a Los Angeles freeway.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Nothing wrong with that.
For real.
Yeah, yeah. What on this track? Just the sheer
brilliance. If you're driving on a freeway. I was over there trying to do business. And I've got this car. And I'm driving on the freeway back to Anaheim, which is where John's parents, they lived there for 20-odd years. So there's always an American thing in the background because they'd emigrated there with my wife.
Yep.
She'd gone over there, didn't work out too for her. She ended up coming back to get married real young. I'm back there doing business, or trying to. seeing people like Tom Payton in the full puffery of Los Angeles with the Filipino boy maids and all that.
Okay.
And the basic rollers have cracked it in America and they're making a TV show and I'm a special guest at the house in the daytime because Tam and I know Tam from before all this stuff, from Scotland.
Yeah.
Aye, Sandy, aye, come up to the house, man, aye, come up to the house. Turn up at this Bel Air mansion or whatever it was, the gates, and I'm like, aye, Sandy. And Tam Payton greets me at the door. In a Michelin man suit because he's trying to lose weight. I'm not kidding. And I go into the house and I get freaked out. This is the same trip. And they're making this TV series and they're doing this, they're doing that. There's all these wee boys running about everywhere and gaming machines, and, you know, pinball machines.
Okay.
It's like a fucking arcade. I knew
yeah, this.
Tomfoolery going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, to see it in that seedy, horrible aspect was horrific. And I'm there with a track that I've recorded in Air London with a 48-piece orchestra. Then, what do you think? Knowing immediately this. Oh, it's great, sir.
Yeah, we're going.
Oh, sir, it's great. Oh, fucking waste of time.
Yeah,
but
totally.
But not a story. That's not a story. That's not a canon story. It's absolute truth. And later that evening, that night, they're all going to some club, and I nearly killed Eric because he had a fight with one of the other boys in the club, staggering out in the street as I'm driving in.
Right.
I nearly fucking run him down.
Really?
On Sunset Boulevard. Honestly.
Wonderful story.
They're all getting introduced to everything that they've never had in their life before because they were closeted to death. You know? Unless, I mean, fuck me. Not in LA, but later, I mean, many years later, when we did all the Germany stuff with Dave D. And started, you know, Les's McEwen's bass that you wrote. What a boy. I mean, he's a hooligan, but boy,
really?
Oh boy. Oh, he's a hooligan. Les is Les, you know. You get what you get. It was written on the package when he was a kid. He is what he is. But it's funny, it's a funny relationship. When I see him, it's almost like he kind of pulls in a little bit for some reason or other.
Like, what now?
Oh, I haven't seen him for a good number of years. Last time was a big TV show we all did in Germany.
Because they were touring again, believe it or not.
Oh, well, they got together sort of ish. Again, but slightly before that, we did this big thing, maybe 2008, 2007.
Okay.
It was a big, big show in Germany.
I think it was last year. I think it was last year. Les McEwen and
Les will go in nicking the reddies whenever he can, wherever he can, whatever chemistry.
I don't know whether it was the original band or whatever. I saw some horrendous shots.
What is the original band?
Well,
even when it was happening, there wasn't an original band because there was. There was Ian Mitchell came in for a while, came with Rosetta Stone.
Right.
And that's all my era, that's all the people I know.
Yeah.
And they were kids when I was already because I'd been in the Chris McClure section, I was asked to teach fucking Eric guitar. A Bit More Guitar by Tam Payton in Scotland, right, in Brechin Town Hall. I remember it really clearly because it was the first gig that Chris McClure's section got paid £200 a night for.
Okay.
That was a big deal. You know, because it was, I used to know where the money was. It was nothing to do with me. I was a hired hand, effectively. Yeah. But I used to know where it was because I always hung about the offices.
Yeah.
I always got to know the people. It was my way of getting in there, sort of thing. I always hung about. When I came to London, when I came to London, I was already married. I was crashing in flats here and there sometimes.
Yeah, as you know.
£15 for the week. You know,
yeah.
Just to crashing and washing the pots and fucking, you know what I mean? That kind of vibe, because I couldn't afford to pay for anything for myself because I wasn't there long enough.
No.
All my money was going to fucking train fares.
Yeah, shipping
really?
Around. Yeah.
You know, already married, and then we had a kid on the way. And that's why I moved to England, because I had to move to England, because then we got falling apart at the seams.
Oh, right, yeah.
Whole different ballgame. Sort of instant small-time pop star for a while. And then punk came along and fucked the whole thing up.
Yeah.
But I was working with old school. So I was working with people like Tony McCauley. I was working directly.
Yeah.
He was a producer. And then Tony got David Soul, so Marmalade kind of took a second place because David Soul was David Soul.
Yeah.
And didn't matter whether he could sing or not, which he could anyway, but he was Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah.
Worldwide. Tony McCauley's wife was in the film business, but it's a fucking no-brainer.
Yeah.
It's an absolute no-brainer.
Yeah.
But Roger Greenaway, different story. Roger Greenaway was a proper, honest man. Not that Tony McCauley wasn't, but a different vision. He stuck with us. It was their label. Roger and Tony, it was their label. It was licensed via EMI. So that period, Nick, was... I haven't heard it for years. Oh, it's fucking hell. You can see how funny state.
Yeah. It's good that we've had a night in, and it's kind of bringing back so many memories. Fantastic stories.
You wouldn't want to be out with me.
Sorry,
You would have then. I'm going back to Chris McClure's first time I met the man. He was about 6'7" as well, and also huge, awkward looking. Eric Wilson. He was a son. He was part of a Jewish family in Glasgow who owned a very, very expensive furniture shop called Elders.
Yeah.
Remember? It's one of these places that nobody ever went in because they couldn't even think about going in because they'd be spotted as being an imposter because they weren't wealthy.
Right.
It was another department in life, possibly like maybe Brian Epstein's type of thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, that kind of Jewish thing.
Yeah.
That sounds very sectarian. I don't mean it that way.
No, I know what you mean.
Elder's furniture shop was like, well, kind of go in there. And he apparently had rebelled and wanted to be a songwriter. And became a songwriter. And was always in people's faces. Always in people's faces. And I only got it via the Chris McClure section, which was down the line. So we would get played demos that the Marmalade had recorded as demos.
Right.
With him trying to get them to do the song.
Okay.
But they had refused to do the song. The tremolos, he was always in. And it became known as the Deck of Clown.
Okay.
And that's not my... That was a story that Graham and Alan Whitehead told me.
Right.
Because he was never gave up. Like Jonathan King never gave up.
Yeah.
Right in your face.
Yeah.
Eric was like that, and he was 6'7". He had later went on to... He had a single, Saint-Tropez, I think it was called. Got Top of the Pops. Ended up meeting what it's called, the project, Alan Parsons.
Yeah, Alan Parsons.
But all the writing was Eric Wilson.
Oh, okay.
All of it was Eric. And he picked themes and did stuff. Fucking massive. Because it was produced by and then put as well, Alan Parsons.
Yeah.
And most, what you're listening to now is basically Pilot, the band Pilot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's Ian playing the guitar.
Yeah. Oh.
Guitar Wonderful. Solo. Listen, just listen to this solo. Where it comes from, God knows. It's a fucking masterful solo. And, you know, sure you can learn it.
I hadn't heard this track, actually.
It don't come from there. It comes from somewhere else.
Yeah, I know, I agree.
And everything that he ever did with Pilot
yeah.
comes from somewhere else. It's like some other god of guitar.
Yeah, it's a spiritual-driven thing, isn't it?
I only been told this, that he never was a person that learned from stuff. He just had his thing and he learned certain rudiments and did his own thing.
Pulled it out.
I met him once or twice, but not even to talk to properly.
No.
EMI parties, Christmas parties.
Yeah.
And with Davey Pate.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Very nice.
So there's a familiarity. I wish I could have played like that, let's put it that way. He lives in Maidenhead as well.
Does he really?
And his guitar, he still takes guitars to a guy that I take guitars to. He's a brilliant guy, he's a guy called Mick Johnson. He's a contemporary of Hank and Bruce.
Okay.
From the Northeast.
Yeah.
But his life was in the army and stuff, and he did stuff. He did 25 years or something in the army and he ended up in Arborfield and lives not far from there. But he's old, much older than me now. But he makes guitars, like, and I'm talking about
Ooh.
Serious,
nice.
Serious guitars.
Nice.
So he makes guitars for anybody that's involved in the Buddy Holly Foundation, acoustic guitars.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about stuff that's like 12, 15 grand a piece. But he does them with, just come round, man. If I go to see Mick, I take a cake or a pie or something like that. It's that kind of generation.
You know? Oh, nice.
You walk in with something, you know. Because he's Newcastle.
Yeah.
Well, Stockton, actually. Stockton and Tees. So, yeah. But old Eric Wilson, I've seen you. That was... the last time I saw Eric was at Medem in France. And he pulled me aside. It was one of these swanning missions to the Medem Festival, you know. You could go in and talk a lot of shite to people, you know, in the hope that something will come of it. And the organisation that used to look after Mongo Jerry, Red Dorset, I was invited to the Martinez, just a social in the bar. That's all. I walked in the bar. You don't miss 6'7", do you? Sandy! Get your ass over here!
Eric! Fuck me!
Now, by this time, he's...
Yeah.
I mean, the Alan Parsons Project worldwide is unreal.
Yeah.
You know, success measure.
Yeah. Big.
Huge. And it's a very closeted thing, you know. It was him and Eric. Alan Parsons and Eric Wilson doing all the writing. So whichever way you measure that up, royalty-wise, you're talking about mega, mega fortunes, you know. So it was the magnum of champagne because Sandy was in the building.
All right.
Dragged to the table, getting the finger-pointing lecture about getting in your garage and you fucking get in there, you write, you bastard. Got a single here, it's very, very good. You need to just... Last time I saw, 4 or 5 years later, dead.
Really?
Yeah. So, yeah. You get to... Well, I mean, now it's worse. You know,
it's that time, isn't it?
There's loads of people.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's that time. The body can't tie.
It's happened to me bad in my life, so... Actually, that's the truth. It's happened to me quite bad, you know, even close to family stuff, the way it happened and how it affected me. It does taint you quite badly.
Yeah, I agree.
So
no,
I carry a lot of that baggage. So as you get older, the baggage seems to get a little bit bigger sometimes, and I find it difficult to cast it off, like all the best lectures and books and self-helps and things in this world tell you you can, you know, I still find it quite difficult. But that's only a measure. There are other moments, you know, when you're in the middle of something. I only find I'm actually focused when I'm doing, like literally doing.
Yeah.
The working up to doing, I can't seem to get there.
Right, okay.
So I get, effectively, it sounds silly, but I get taken to gigs, or even if I'm driving. I'm doing that all my life, so, and I would rather be driving than sitting, you know.
Yeah.
And when I get there, everything about everything else, I actually don't like too much, because I've been doing it all my life.
Yeah.
And much of it comes under the banner of hanging around. Because that's all it actually is.
Hanging around,
you're just fucking hanging around.
No,
waiting to do what you do.
I do agree with
Once
that.
Once I start to do what I do, I have no thoughts about all the rest of it. I do what I do. Almost mindlessly. Because I do it. That's what I do.
Yeah.
And then when it's finished, all the rest of it comes back to being... I wish I was home. I wish I was in a hotel. I wish I was somewhere else.
Wanting something else.
I'm finished now. Yeah. I'm finished now.
Yeah.
But then the nature of what you are and... Ha ha ha! Oh, this is back to the big brother. The sun is fuck me. Still sounds as if it was made yesterday.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I thought exactly that when I listened through.
Try and play that on any instrument, that descending line.
Yeah.
That's an arranger and proper string players. It's
I can remember listening to this.
How was his career? How long was his career? You've gone away and when you're thinking all these things, it's fucking staggering.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody else has got all these multitudes of years and output, but then you. So, that is a classic. For me, that's.
No, I totally agree.
And I was
totally
only a wee boy at the time.
Yeah,
but I do remember my brother's friends. I said this to you maybe the time before I was here. Your bedroom's becoming a haunt. This is becoming dangerous to society. I remember my brother's friends, really remember this very clearly, coming to his door, our door, knocking the door to tell my brother that Buddy Holly had died. Three of them standing at the door in overcoats and stuff in the close of the house where we live. And I was just hanging about at the back. And one of them was crying his eyes out. I'm going, what?
Yeah, strange, isn't it? Yeah, it's a strange.
Because the albums were there because it was, you know, they'd swap albums and stuff like that. So I was introduced to the music, but not first hand, but second hand. And it was there, it was all around me.
Yeah.
Although I didn't know it. Hence, even classically things. And my eldest sister was into a little bit of that. Not too much, but a little bit. And it'd be popular pieces that were in the household that I would hear, you know, like the Peer Gynt Suite.
Yeah, yeah.
William Taylor was over tours. Yeah. They were on records in the house. And, you know, the
Planets. Well, you kind of brushed along many things, didn't
bits
you?
Bits of jazz, trad,
you did.
Bits of modern.
Through
nearly,
a bushy lane.
I was nearly going to pick Take Five as one of my favourite records.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because it's untouchably brilliant in what it is and what it was when it was what it was, which I didn't appreciate at the time, except I just knew it, I liked it.
No, I know. I do know exactly what you mean.
I didn't know it was in 5/4. I just knew it worked. You know, from a musical point of view.
Yeah.
You know, and it still works, and I hear it, and I go, yeah, that's great.
We'll do that next time.
We can do that next time.
Next time you come.
But jazz? What's he on about?
There's nothing wrong with jazz. No, again, a bit
but
more.
But GBY old.
A bit more stuff from my dad's background. My dad was a huge jazz fan.
But you mentioned the Who as well, so I mean, where do we go from there?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we could spend months, couldn't we? We could spend months here talking, listening.
I did see them in the first Scottish.
And
TV
the wonderful
show.
Stories you've told, fantastic, fantastic. It's been a true pleasure to have you here, Sandy.
Thank
it
you
really
very much.
Has, and it's it's great to just spend some time and do what we do.
Absolutely.
And to have a food trip.
Hopefully we'll have more time to do what we do.
I think we should. I think we should. We should spend a lot more time together.
Thank you
very
much.
Great to see you, mate. Thank you. Stay safe.
Cheers.
We'll catch you again
soon. We are now shaking
hands,
which you cannot see.
But we are shaking hands, my friends.
We are. Hey, hey. Hi, see.
Indeed. Mean.
Love you, Sand. Love you. Be careful. Stay safe. Bye-bye, mate. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
A Night In is brought to you by Ashwood Music.